Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I mean, you see guys signing.
Yeah.
I think I see them too. So, you know, I guess we wait.
Where do things stand there for you?
I'm sorry?
Where do things stand there for you?
You know, we haven't reached anything yet.
Are you still optimistic?
Probably not as.
Mets are amazing, 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 amazing.
There's a fly ball hit out to the left. Waiting is Jones. The Mets are the world champions.
Here's the 1-2 pitch. Check him out. Seaver has 19 strikeouts.
Swung on, hit on the ground towards first.
Jones on the run. This one has a chance. Home run! Mike Piazza and the Mets lead 3-2.
To left field, Floyd. And after running roughshod over the National League, the Mets have a title to show for it. 2006 National League East champions.
Here's the payoff pitch from Familia to Fowler on the way. And it's in there. Strike three called. The Mets win the pennant. The New York Mets have won the National League pennant. Put it in the books.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast this Monday, March 25th, 2019. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at MetsMemorizedOnline.com. Send me a tweet at Mike Silva Media. And you can get the show on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. Of course, Jacob deGrom was kind enough with his words from the other day to introduce the podcast, and his words about his optimism or lack thereof of his contract situation. A lot to get into. Joining me in just a little bit, and he's got some news on the whole deGrom situation, will be Mike Mayer from MetsMemorizedOnline.com. Some good sources, as always, the guys at MetsMemorizedOnline.com. We're not just the, you know, your average blog with just opinion, but also trying to do some news here. And trying to really provide you the best, what I think is some of the best overall content for the Mets in the anywhere, you know, short of those who have direct access to the team. So Mike will be joining me in just a bit. Now, when you get this, I don't know. I mean, it's Monday night, and I purposely moved the podcast to Monday night because this is so fluid right now, the DeGrom situation. And I know opening day is just a few days away, and that normally would be what we'd all be talking about, but I mean, look, this is the big story now. I know that the whole travel to Syracuse is a big story. I'll get into that in a minute because Noah Syndergaard has created quite a stir there. And, you know, the fans are wondering, you know, let's just get this thing going on. Like, why are we talking about all this? Can't we just talk baseball? But, you know, in the modern baseball world, sports world, it's more about what goes on off the field than goes on the field. But Mets have their work cut out for them this weekend with an opening series, a tough opening series against the Nats, best three pitchers, a big test series right off the bat. Not going to get crazy one way or the other, but it would be good to see the Nats home opener, top three pitchers, you know, their offense without Harper. Last year, early in the year, the Mets swept the Nats in Washington, and be interesting to see how that plays out. So a lot to get to. But let's start with DeGrom, and I really want to lay this contract situation out because I think there's a lot at play here. The first thing I'll say is I don't think either way, whether they get a, you know, there's not a way you could predict what will happen if the contract isn't signed by the end of, or not the end of the week, before opening day. I don't think DeGrom is immediately gone. I'm not sure he's going to stay. I do think once they get past the deadline, depending on how much progress they've made, there is a chance that something can be done. I mean, they make it sound like, well, he doesn't want to negotiate in season, and I understand that, but it's not like he's going to be 5 minutes before game time on the phone with his agent talking financial numbers. I mean, these guys do have lives outside of baseball. It's a long day. There's a lot to do. It's not your typical, clock in, clock out, 9 to 5, but they have downtime. If you have time to tweet, not that DeGrom does, you have time to tweet and clown around like some other pitchers on that staff, you have time to talk business with your agent and still be able to go to work and play. So I don't think that's all, hope is lost on Thursday. Of course, I think there's another dynamic to this, that if the Mets don't come to an agreement, there may be some questions in that clubhouse because the media has perpetuated this, and the Mets have created this with their own issues financially, but the media perpetuates this on a consistent basis, that ownership is not committed to this roster, this team, and I think there's a lot more to that than just pay the guy. Like Noah Syndergaard says, we'll reward the guy. Well, he got rewarded. Mets gave him $17 million and didn't have to go to arbitration, so he was rewarded for last year. Now, you could say because it was such a great season, one of the best all-time seasons in Mets history, that's not enough, and I could understand that. It's probably more like a $30 to $33 million season, but he was rewarded based on what he agreed to without going to arbitration, based on the arbitration process for that season. So this idea they need to reward him with a contract, the contract is about investing in him for the future and investing in what he will bring for the future, not for 2018, which is over, which means nothing now. And DeGrom has his work cut out for him in the sense where it's going to pale in comparison. Because unless he can do the same exact thing and have the same type of season, which will be hard, and if he does, God bless. But even if he goes up 0.3 run, half a run, it's still going to be a phenomenal stat line, but you'll hear. Mark my words, you'll hear it. Well, he's not as good as last year, and that's also a risk. You know, there's as much risk right now for DeGrom as there is for the Mets. The Mets could risk issues in the clubhouse, and it sounds like at least there's the start of some simmering of discontent with this whole Syracuse thing. Syndergaard seems to bring in and out. I don't know what this plays into with Van Wagenen or Callaway. You know, this is the Van Wagenen's wheelhouse, the player and all this stuff, and I'll get to that in a little bit. So maybe you want to be careful here if you're the Mets, both front office and manager, where this doesn't become an early season disgruntled where the team looks at it as, well, you know, our guy, our best player, maybe their leader when you look at what goes on in terms of who's on the field as an everyday player. Although Cano seems to be taking a little bit of that right now. But as far as the leader of the staff, if he's not rewarded, what does that mean for us? And do these guys care? And I don't think they're going to go out and think about this while they're pitching. But you don't want to get any kind of negativity seeping in that clubhouse because that's not what this team needs right off the bat from the jump. As far as DeGrom, he doesn't come in and get something done. You know, he's a day closer to being north of 30 and being into that danger zone. And if you look and you look at all these guys and you see how Mike Trout brought it up, there was an article in The Athletic by Ken Rosenthal, how he saw what Manny Machado and what Bryce Harper went through. And maybe the market changes, and maybe for DeGrom it'll be different when he's a free agent. You don't know. But I'll tell you what, you go out into the free agent market, or you wait, and you start to have a bad year, or God forbid, even if it's not a serious injury, you get hurt, you put any doubt into the minds of these teams, which now have models and analytical data that will dial into what they believe you are worth to the penny. You could have yourself a problem and leave money on the table. So there's a risk on both sides. This isn't just on the Mets front. As far as the people say, just give it to him, that's not how negotiations work. And I'll tell you, this is a more complicated negotiation than your normal one. First, if you're on the CAA side with the Mets, you don't want to give up anything. You want to maximize the value of this contract. You want it to seem to the public that your former employer didn't go over to the other side and negotiate a bargain discount. He didn't do that. And if you're on the Mets side, the complexity, of course, is as you get to the age and how they've, and the Wilpons are, you know, especially Fred, is very much with his history looking at long-term contracts, Beltran, Santana, Wright. Even though I think out of all of those, you know, Beltran was probably the best, and each one of those had its highs and its lows. I think Wright's was, in essence, was the worst out of all of them because you paid Wright for prior performance. You got you did not get the same Wright in any part of that contract. You didn't get the same Wright that you had before. You have to understand that you're going to probably get a dud year or maybe two out of a long-term deal. Now, in a five-year deal, and I've said from the beginning, and I said this a couple of weeks ago, I thought, you know, just looking at comparables, DeGrom is a $30 million a year annual average value. He's probably going to be asked for 5 years and deserves 5 years. I think anything north of that is a problem. And you're looking at about $150 million. Now, how that shakes out, how they pay it in the front, the back, deferrals, all this other stuff, I mean, that could be part of the negotiation. But I think that's where Chris Sale is essentially at. Verlander's about $33 million a year, but he's on a shorter-term deal. Maybe the Mets would be interested in something like that. I'm sure DeGrom isn't. DeGrom, you know, wants as many years as possible. This might be probably his only long-term contract he's going to sign. It just so happened the way, you know, the age he was brought up, you know, hitting free agency at the age of you know, north of 30 if he does go to free agency in a couple of years. It's just a perfect storm where DeGrom is not in the best spot either. But it's not your normal negotiation because of the age, because of CAA. And then you add in the situation where there's pressure on the Mets, and it's dynamic because of the media. The media is going out there. They're seeing Verlander sign. They're seeing Sale sign. They're seeing all these extensions going. And they're saying, well, if the Mets don't get it done, they failed. So you're adding that noise to that. I don't know how that's impacting DeGrom. I'm sure it's really not. I mean, the player's the one you could get concerned about because they, and I don't know how DeGrom is, they read this stuff. Professionals like the agent, they don't get involved in all that stuff. They may use it as a selling tool or a negotiating tool. But anyone who's a professional doesn't let media nonsense get in the way. So what do I think will happen? I still believe they will come to an accord. I have to think it's in the Mets' best interest and DeGrom's best interest. And I think it'll be somewhere in a five-year deal. I think it'll be around $30 million a year. There may be other things like no trade clauses and stuff. It's hard to predict that. But, you know, when people say, if it doesn't happen, there's only one other point I'll throw. Now, maybe that's the doubt I'll throw into the mix here. And it's such that the Mets, you know, Chris Sale wanted to be in Boston, and he made it clear. I'm not saying DeGrom doesn't want to be with the Mets, but DeGrom may not want to be with the Mets at the level where Verlander and Sale may have wanted to be with their teams. DeGrom might feel like there are other options. Maybe there's the places he want to play. Does he love New York? He's from down south. He's from down Florida. So is looking at other options other than the New York market something that's appealing? You don't know. So he'll sign with the Mets if the price is right, if it's exactly what he wants. But even if he's willing to take a risk in his, you know, north of 30 years, you know, maybe there are other places he'd like to see or play. Or maybe he's hoping that lack of a deal, if it's not perfect, will lead him to potentially being traded, you know, and being in a different situation. I don't think that's the case, but put that in the back of your mind, too. Where DeGrom hasn't come out, he said, yeah, I want to be here, I like being a Met. But it wasn't as definitive as maybe what you heard from a Chris Sale, who said, you know, essentially when he signed this is where I wanted to be. Makes it a lot easier if you're sold, signed, sealed, and delivered, and you're like, hey, this is where I want to be. Give me where I am, you know, fair market value, and let's get it done. Maybe the Grom's at a point where, I go back to what I said about CAA, is a lot of complexities because of the relationship with the GM and all that other stuff. One other thing with the Mets part is DeGrom is the domino that goes to the rest of the rotation. If DeGrom is bungled in terms of an overpay or it doesn't work out or he gets hurt right away, you know, that's immediately going to impact Wheeler, who they have to make a decision on in the next 12 months, less than that. Syndergaard is someone in the next couple of years they have to make a decision on. And then there's Matz. So I look at it this way. I think out of all of them, I think Matz is a guy that if he can live up to being even his potential as a number three starter, solid lefty. I know he doesn't live in New York anymore, but his family's from Long Island, Stony Brook kid, maybe one who would say, hey, I'll take a team-friendly deal and buy out some years. Wheeler and Syndergaard is where you're going to have to make your decision. I think DeGrom plays into how much money they give him the years. You can't keep all four. It'd be ideal. If they all live up to the potential, you're going to have to pick three or four. And I'll tell you what, we'll get to that in a minute again. I keep saying that. But Syndergaard mounding off, I know how that ownership group thinks and looks, especially with a new affiliate that they own. That's not something that they're going to appreciate. So if I look at it this way, if Wheeler stays healthy, there's issues with long-term, breaking down, mechanics with Wheeler. There's Syndergaard, is how serious he is. Is he more interested in being a cartoon character than, you know, necessarily a stud pitcher? It's still up in the air with those two, but I think at the end of the day, the Mets pick one of those two. I predict maybe Mats will be a guy to sign a team-friendly deal, and I think eventually they get something done with DeGrom. It makes too much sense for both sides because there's a lot of variables that make this risky for both of them, especially for the Mets with a new GM and an environment and a culture where I think they don't want to sour some of the good feel that they've built up since Van Wagenen was hired around October. All right, let's take a quick break. When we return, Noah Syndergaard had a lot to say, and I want to talk to you about it, let you know what I think about it. You're listening to the Talking Mets podcast. We'll be back with more right after this.
Oh, that's a different situation. I'm just going to kind of sit back and let it all unfold how it is. I think Drake's best pitcher in baseball right now. I think he deserves whatever amount he's worth. And I think, I want him to keep him happy. So when it does come time for him to reach free agency, he stays on our side, pitching for the Mets. I think they should quit all this fuss and pay the man already. Because of what you see in what's going on with baseball right now, if like there wasn't a trend of other guys getting contract extensions, then I don't know what the circumstance would be. But you see like Chris Sale, Verlander, those guys getting extensions. I think it's time Jacob gets one too. Where are we going again? We're going to Sarasota.
And Sarasota.
And then to Syracuse, and then we're not going to New York. You'd think we'd go to New York to get, like, as adults, our things, our affairs in order. But no, we got to go to Syracuse first. I don't know whose idea that was, but it's not a smart one. I don't think that's conducive for winning ball games, really. That much travel. I'm sure the amenities in Syracuse aren't the best for a Major League Baseball team to go out there and have one last workout before the regular season starts, but those kind of decisions are above my pay grade.
All right, we're back. Talking Mets podcast. You heard Noah Syndergaard's comments from the other day, and as we're recording this, he's doing his live Twitter Q&A, and as luck would have it, and it's Murphy's Law with the Mets, the flight to Syracuse tonight gets delayed by 3 hours, and the media is reporting a lot of players grumbling. Of course they're grumbling. I mean, who the hell wants to have their flight delayed? I'll start with this, with the whole Syracuse thing. The Mets are not the only team to be playing exhibition games with their affiliate. This happens all the time. As a matter of fact, this used to happen in the middle of the season where instead of having a day off, the Mets would play Tidewater or Lynchburg or guys like that back in the day. So think about that. You know, the Mets are doing this before the season. I understand they want to get settled. I'm all for that, especially when you're starting the season, you want to get your stuff settled in New York, you want to get focused, and then you want to go to D.C. and get ready. They're in Sarasota. Now they're going to Syracuse for a workout that they're not into and answering the same questions again and yada, yada, yada. And the Syracuse media will probably be there. So they're probably going to have to do the same thing, the dog and pony show they've been doing, you know, in Florida for how long. But it's really important for the Mets right now, who have had such a bad history over the last 15 years probably or thereabouts with affiliates. The Mets were kicked out of Norfolk, from what I understand, because they took advantage of the relationship and didn't really procure it or develop it and pay attention to the tides. And even though the Baltimore Orioles make a ton more sense, the Mets had a huge, long-standing relationship with that affiliate for many, many years, for 3 decades plus? And it went away with a snap of a finger. and threw the Mets into chaos where they were at a way station in New Orleans. Then they go to Buffalo, and you figure, all right, they signed a long-term deal. Buffalo's got a new stadium, and that's soured because they didn't like how they were treated by the Mets. A number of different things, players they wanted the Mets to sign just to be a drawing card, and obviously the Mets didn't put out the most competitive Triple-A teams during a period where the farm system was in a bad position, right around when Omar Minaya was fired. And then the game of musical chairs with affiliates these days, the Mets get stuck in Vegas, and they don't really want to be there. Vegas knows the Mets don't want to be there, but they're these two places because of their ballpark situation and the league and the Mets not having anything. It's a shotgun marriage. They're stuck together. And now they finally have this Syracuse situation where they have ownership. It aligns with the branding. You basically, from the north of New York State all the way down to the city, have all these affiliates that are in New York and could generate a whole new generation of Mets fans up and down the state. And I think that's important. And this is a small thing. Yes, it's an inconvenience, but it's a small thing. But get off to a good start. This whole thing, and I know it's bad luck with the plane being late, but Syndergaard stirring the pot publicly. And this is not about whether he has the right to say it or not. It's more about understanding and have the maturity to know how this impacts negatively the feel around the club. This is a grievance that you air with your coach, with your manager, as a team. Player representatives bring to the team, and maybe they have. Bringing it to the media does nothing but give you what you have here now, which is an extra X number of minutes on a podcast, Twitter clicks on a website. It does no good. The media is just using this as a way to fill space. They love it. I could see them on Twitter, the glee. Oh, the plane is late. I mean, they might as well have their pom-poms out cheering, don't take off, don't take off, don't take. I mean, this is absurd. It's childish. This is what you get today's day and age of media. And he knew what he was doing, and he did it. And that, to me, doesn't show leadership. That shows immaturity. Sometimes I wonder if Syndergaard likes being the center of attention and gets bored with a lot of it. I think his Twitter antics with the Mr. Met and all that show that. To me, Noah Syndergaard right now should be worried about replicating what he did in 2016. Because other than 2016... he's been an utter disappointment in 17 and 18. He was imminently hittable last year, even before he got hurt. 17, he botched that whole thing with his off-season workout. Everything he did goodwill between 15 and 16 right now is a distant memory. And he has a lot to prove. I said this earlier. Chip on your shoulder, good thing. He's not even being mentioned as one of the top 10 starters in baseball anymore. I played you the clip from MLB Network. He has a lot to prove. Right now you can make the argument, and I've been not the biggest fan of Zach Wheeler for years. Zach Wheeler right now is more the number two than Syndergaard. He was more polished last year. He was more unhittable last year than Syndergaard. Syndergaard was imminently hittable last year. So he has a lot more to worry about than trips to Syracuse. He has to worry about himself performing at the level that he likes to put himself in. Do you want to be a cartoon character or do you want to be an elite pitcher? The cartoon character is in Anaheim now. See how that worked out for him. You want to go that route or do you want to be here and be elite and be Robin or Batman to 1A to Batman of DeGrom? And right now I think the best they'll do is Robin. DeGrom is your pathway to success. Shut his mouth, improved every year. Your pathway to success isn't shooting off your mouth and being a clown and bring into the media unnecessary, which I really think was more about his displeasure. I'd be curious. I'm sure there are others who aren't crazy about it, but I bet you if you got some of those players in that room, they's like it wasn't an issue that should have been brought to the public light. It was an internal clubhouse issue. You don't hear Michael Conforto talking about it. So to me, this is not the greatest foot to start the 2019 season that Syndergaard could get off on. But I've said this for weeks now, and I'll say it again. Does Syndergaard want to be a cartoon character and a Twitter handle and a Twitter persona, or does he want to be an elite pitcher? And we'll know very quickly, starting this weekend against Washington, which one he's at least getting himself, which start he's getting himself off to in 2019. All right, let's take a quick break. When we return, Michael Mayer, MetsMorizedOnline.com, Mets Miners, has an interesting little bit of information about the Jacob deGrom contract. So let's hear what he has to say. You're listening to the Talking Mets podcast. We'll be back with more right after this. We're back, and joining us from MetsMorizedOnline.com, Mets Miners, our good friend Mike Mayer. You can check out Mike on Twitter at MikeMayerMMO. And we'll kick it off as just a little bit ago, and it's a good thing we actually pushed the program from Sunday to Monday, trying to get as much content, as much news into these things as possible. And, you know, Mike had some good information that said maybe things are progressing a little bit with Jacob deGrom and the contract extension. So, Mike, first, welcome to the program, and maybe you could start off with, and I don't know when people will be listening to this. Things may have changed by the time they listen to this, but as of Monday night, it looks like maybe there's some positive trends with Jacob deGrom and the Mets coming to an agreement.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Mike. And, yeah, that's kind of the impression that I was given by the source I talked to about an hour ago at this point, that there were some positive signs towards them working a deal out before opening day, which was obviously just a few days away. And, of course, that doesn't mean anything's definite that it's going to get done, but this, to me, is a good sign because there hadn't been much positive in terms that I have heard or anyone else has reported that there was a good chance of this getting done. So obviously remains to be seen, but I think maybe some of the recent activity between Chris Sale and Justin Verlander have kind of pushed the Mets towards trying to get this done.
I also think fans have to understand that, you know, obviously it's easy to say, give them the money. This is a negotiation. I think there's a lot of layers to that. And as I said in the open, I think there's a couple of things that come into play here. First, I think on the CAA side, they want to be able to walk away from this looking as if they didn't concede anything, in my opinion, because of the whole Van Wagenen situation. You don't want to walk away if you're on the CAA side and say, well, it looks like we gave a discount or we gave it to our old employee. You also have the Jacob deGrom side, which he's playing a little bit of roulette here. He doesn't come to an agreement. He decides to play this another year. We all hope he has a great year, and I'm sure he will. Will it be as good? It's always going to be, and he'll learn this because after 1985, and I know it may not be apples to apples, but after 1985, Doc Gooden never had a year like that. And it's always going to be hard to live up to that. But also, if he continues to move towards free agency north of 30, the lesson, and markets change, but the lesson is it's going to be hard and stressful to get a contract, and it may not be the contract you want. So there's pressure on both sides. I think they get a deal done. But it's not as cut and dry for either side. I think there's a lot of layers to this that make this a little bit more complicated than some of the other contracts that were signed over the last 72 hours or so.
Oh, for sure. Like you said, I mean, just between CAA wanting to make sure that they're getting DeGrom the right deal and the fact that they're dealing with DeGrom's former agent and trying to do so. And you also have to factor in, which you didn't talk about, was the Wilpons. And I mean, it's been made pretty public that they're weary of giving any long-term deal because of how some of the recent ones have turned out, with Cespedes the most recent, David Wright towards the back end of his, even Johan Santana on the back end of his. So I think you have to know that the Wilpons, and more specifically Fred Wilpon, is kind of being cautious about giving out another long-term deal.
And there's also ramifications. As I was saying, and I'm curious if you're looking at my logic, I look at it as you want to get DeGrom at the right price. And I've said for a few weeks now, about $150 million, average of $30 million a year is that price. And that's around where you have your Chris Sale numbers at that point. 33, Verlander, but $30 million a year annual average value is where they're at. Whatever they do above and beyond, even with years, that's going to bleed into Wheeler. That's going to bleed into Syndergaard. That's going to bleed into Mats. And I think long-term,
if these guys live up to potential, you're probably, in best case scenario, going to be able to keep only three of four. I think you have a chance of getting Matt's at some point team-friendly contract, maybe because he's from New York, he's from Long Island, even though he doesn't live there anymore. Maybe his family will, you know, be a part of him that wants to stay and not test the waters. I think you're going to have to wind up selecting which one, Wheeler, the decision comes sooner rather than later, or Syndergaard. And I think if they do wind up getting a positive season out of Wheeler and they feel good about a long-term deal, I think Syndergaard's the guy that may get dealt regardless of what happens after this year. So long range, I think DeGrom gets his money. I think you got to pick between Wheeler and Syndergaard. Both come with risks. And I think Matz is a guy more than likely, not more than likely, but the most likely, I think, that would get a team-friendly deal. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think, like you said, I highly doubt all four of them stay long-term. Obviously, on Matz, too, he's going to be the cheaper of the four, given what they've done at the major league level. And I wouldn't discount what's going on with Noah Syndergaard right now. He's been very vocal recently, and I don't have an issue with him being vocal about it, but about his disappointment with going to Syracuse and the arrangements of travel before the season. But the Wilpons don't like stuff like this being publicly talked about. He's on Twitter doing a Q&A right now, and obviously the questions are all geared towards that. And that the Wilpons are going to see this. I mean, they've talked about how they don't like the publicity in the past, whether when they were talked about jealousy with the Yankees and stuff like that. And we know what went on with Matt Harvey. And so, like you said, if there was someone out of that group that they could possibly deal, it could. I think you're right with Noah Syndergaard, and not just because of those reasons, but I mean, they at the start of this offseason, that was a pitcher that was readily available for whatever reason from the front office.
And look, I know he doesn't like this whole Syracuse thing. And I said in the open, I said, the issue I have here is it's not ideal. I understand the whole, you want to go back to New York, you want to get settled, regardless of whether you're a player and what you think and the accommodations, being settled as a person, especially when you have a job that requires routine and focus, is important. And going from Florida to Syracuse, then to D.C., sure, that's not ideal. But it is so important. And, Mike, you know this as someone who covers the minors. The Mets have had awful, for the most part, relationships with their affiliates. The Buffalo situation went sour for a variety of reasons. I know New Orleans was a way station. I don't think they were thrilled with the Mets. The Mets left the longtime affiliate, Norfolk, formerly Tidewater, essentially because the Mets ignored the affiliate, and the affiliate didn't feel the love. And then they've been in Vegas the last few years, but let's face it, that marriage was shotgun. There was never an intention. I think that Vegas knew the Mets weren't long-term players, and the Mets never really wanted to be there. It was the musical chairs, and that was the chair that was left. So, yes, the Mets have ownership stake in this team. So it's a little bit different. But getting this off to a positive start is important. And if it means doing a workout there, taking some pictures, doing some nonsense things, I don't think it's a lot to ask. Syndergaard could have probably done a better job than the way he aired it to the press. And I got to tell you, nobody challenged him in the press on that. I think they goaded him on. And I had the audio earlier in the program. I was a little disappointed in how it was handled through all sides, to be quite frank.
Yeah, I mean, Syndergaard, as we found out, is a guy that if you put a mic in front of him, he's just going to be honest and tell you what he feels. And I certainly don't – I know.
Am I off base, Mike, on any of this stuff? Am I off base? Do you think I'm way out of line here?
No, I don't think you're terribly off base. I think we pretty much feel the same way. I guess my thing is I don't have an issue with Syndergaard saying what he did. But I kind of do have an issue with the Syracuse thing. Like you said, it is a good thing to get off to a good start in Syracuse, new affiliate. But I mean, where was this when they started in Columbia? That didn't happen. And what it didn't happen in Columbia because the Mets, the Wilpons, didn't own the franchise there. So I guess a little more consistency would be my thing. Like, if you're going to do this to all the new affiliates, whether you own that affiliate or not. And that's just a, like an ongoing issue that I would see. It looks more like they're pushing the players to do this and the players don't want to do this. So I guess that's kind of where I'm coming from on it.
I hear you. Michael Mayer, at Mike Mayer MMO on Twitter, joining us here. Mike, you were just recently in Port St. Lucie, and I'm curious, you know, we got the season just less than a week away. This will be our final opportunity to talk about the Mets before the games count. And, you know, I'm not in the prediction business, but, you know, I think the team's improved. They had a good spring offensively, surprisingly so, more so than I even expected as I went through the numbers. And I know it's spring. The pitching is healthy. The bullpen looks improved. Obviously, there's some questions on depth, especially with the starting rotation. And the division is tight. You know, the Phillies are better. The Braves won the division last year, although I think they, you know, were a little overrated for most of the year. I think I never believed that, you know, if it was a normal year that they would have won that division. And that's, even without Harper, looked tough. Going into your trip to Port St. Lucie and then walking out of it, do you have a different opinion about the Mets and this team after spending a few days around the ball club?
No, not really. I think this is, they're definitely a playoff contender, more likely for the wild card. And that was built through a lot position player depth. And I mean, they still have arguably the best 1-2-3 in baseball for starters. So I still like the Nats a little bit better. And I think the Phillies are right there too. And the big issue I have with the Mets is current pitching depth. The fifth starter, Mats, has been an injury issue his entire career. And Vargas is obviously on the downside of his career, coming off a terrible season. So a guy like Gio Gonzalez would have fit, obviously. Dallas Keuchel's still out there. And then in the bullpen, we've seen with the final spot there that they just assumed early in camp, before I got to Port St. Lucie, everyone just assumed it was going to be Hector Santiago. And then when I was down there, he got lit up twice, and that kind of threw off their plans. And then Tim Peterson got knocked around a little bit, and then Kyle Doughty finally had a couple of good outings. I still think that's a spot where they kind of missed the chance to get a guy like an Adam Warren or a Nick Vincent, or just someone who's had a history of success at the major league level, that were readily available for pretty cheap. Even recently, Alex Wilson was cut and then got a major league deal. Maybe the Mets did show interest, but that's the type of guys that they should have been trying to get to help round out a bullpen that is really good on the top end, but could still use depth.
Without a doubt, Michael Mayer, Mike Mayer MMO on Twitter. You know, I thought maybe Gio Gonzalez. I know that they haven't been that hot to trot on him. I think what you see, and I agree with you, I think the bullpen is going to need another arm. I think we always knew that. I think when you get past five, and this has been for a billion years, you need 8, 9, 10 starters to get through a season. And right now, after the top five, I guess Corey Oswalt is your six.
Yeah.
Mickey Callaway's been pretty adamant that Gazelman and Lugo won't be starters. Maybe they go the opener route with those guys if there's a rash of injuries. Is the Drew Gagneau, I think I said his name right. I never kind of figured out that guy's name. The depth? Is there anything that we're not looking at? Is Oswalt, I think he could be an acceptable depth piece as league average. Are there other depth pieces that we should keep an eye on as the year goes on that are currently in the organization that you feel could give you five innings, 2-3 runs, or six innings, 3 runs? Or, I mean, that's what you're going to expect out of a replacement. Nothing really better than that unless it's a huge outlier.
Yeah, I actually think Oswald threw the ball really well this spring. His velocity was back up in the mid-90s. You have to remember with him last year, the Mets, well, first off, in the minor leagues, he had a minor injury, and then the Mets needed him for a start, so he got kind of called up off schedule, and then he was in the bullpen a little bit. He was making some starts, and then he was back to the minors, back up, and he was getting pushed all around. His throw schedule was getting messed up. And then he actually had a string of the type of starts you were talking about. Five runs, five innings, two runs, six innings, three runs, where he was actually a pretty somewhat reliable starter. So I think he's decent depth there. The problem after him is, like you're talking about, the Drew Gagneaus of the world. That's not a major league starter. Hector Santiago obviously showed he's not a major league starter. Walker Lockett, who they got in the Kevin Plawecki trade, didn't show that he was a starter this spring either. He doesn't have an out pitch. So beyond that, I think one of the next guys you're looking at is left-hander David Peterson. But he just finished at St. Lucie last year. I believe he's going to start in Binghamton, so he'll be in Double A. And he, by the second half, could be one of those guys is ready to step in. And again, he's not a guy that's a 1-2 top of the end ceiling type guy. He's more of a back end guy, but he's the one that I would look out for that you could possibly see in the second half of the season if they need a starter.
Throw you another name, Zach Lee, former first round pick, Dodgers, pitched the other day. That might be another guy that we keep an eye on in Syracuse.
Yeah, I think, he'll be in that Syracuse rotation. Chris Flexen, who actually came in the camp looking like we say best shape of his life, but I mean, he really did look like he was in great shape, and he only got into a couple early appearances, but he looked, his stuff looked good too. So, I mean, there's a couple of interesting arms there. You just would like to see another guy who's had success in the major leagues as an option for starters. Like you said, you're going to use 8, 9, 10, 11 starters every year. Everyone does. It's just how it is. And the Mets 8, 9, 10 starters are not what you would hope they would be.
I hear you on that. I think that's the depth in the starting rotation is one thing. I think the bullpen, although I think it's improved, we'll see. I mean, I've had concerns about Familia's arm. Justin Wilson is a nice piece, but I think his walks worry me. Diaz didn't have a great spring. I know I've talked to some people off air, and they're like, don't worry about it, but I always worry about stuff. And, Lugo Gonzalman, you may need them as openers or as bridges, and, you're not going to be able to, pitch them every day. That's not the way they're going to be used. So, that looks like that's the big opportunity for this team. As you went into spring, was there something that really caught your attention at Port St. Lucie, a player or a situation or anything that you went in and weren't expecting? What really caught your attention when you went down there that you weren't expecting, I guess, a player or something about the Mets that you could share?
Well, I mean, one player, which he's now gotten plenty of publicity because of he's actually played in a couple of games now, is 17-year-old Ronnie Mauricio. FanGraphs already had him as their 68th best prospect in baseball at 17 years old. It's tough not to watch this guy and just start grueling. He's for 17, he's got a polished swing. He hasn't shown, he's starting to show power, and that he's just going to grow into more power. He looks smooth at shortstop. He's got enough speed, switch hitter. He does look better from the left side when I saw him, but I mean, he got into some major league games. I think he went like 3-for-7 in major league games. And the thing that impressed me the most was, he was getting fooled early in counts on breaking balls, taking some bad swings on them. But later in the count, when he got the two strikes, a couple of times he kind of shortened his swing a little bit and stayed back on the ball, and he actually got a hit on a two-strike count, and he got a sac fly in a two-strike count too. So that's something to see from a 17-year-old against major league caliber pitching. That's really impressive. Another thing that I noticed was kind of on the backfields was just like when you walk up to one of the minor league games, there's always minor league pitchers tracking the pitches, and then there's a couple of scouts there, and then there's sometimes a coach or two there. And this year, there just seemed to be more involvement from five or six coaches right there watching, talking to the pitchers tracking, talking to the track man that's hooked up, that's tracking the pitches, and just seemed to be a better line of communication between everyone in the organization on the minor league side.
Yeah, and I think that was something they started working on last year that I know was not something that was done well, and especially in the last couple of years with Collins and Worth it in that group. So disappointments, what did you come away with a little bit down on? Anything other than that we just talked about the depth and some of the things? Any player that you walked away with a different opinion? Well, give me the flip side.
On the flip side, there wasn't a minor leaguer necessarily or a big prospect that I saw that I was really disappointed in. I'd say maybe the thing that stood out to me the most was watching Travis d'Arnaud throw. He's obviously not healthy right now. I know he's played some in the Major League spring games, and he was in the backfield quite a bit too playing. I think that's kind of you don't want teams seeing what he's got back there as much. And it definitely sounds like now he's going to start the season on the injured list. So it'll be interesting to see just how long he takes down there, and once he comes up, how healthy he is. He looked okay swinging the bat, I should say, but he was trouble getting lift, even swinging the bat. So he's definitely not healthy. That's something to keep an eye on. And as we know now, the Mets have signed Rene Rivera to kind of fill in some catcher depth.
Yeah, the whole catching situation was interesting because being that d'Arnaud is, based on what you're telling me, not healthy, and he wasn't a great defensive catcher and a thrower even before all this, Wilson Ramos is going to play majority of the time, but 120 games is what you're looking at. That's what his history has said. And I thought Devin Mesoraco was a decent backup. It was an overplay having him as a starter last year, but that was out of need. Thomas Nito definitely is a better defensive player, especially when you talk about framing. The fact that Rivera's ticketed for AAA, and I like that signing. They're forcing Mesoraco. It's a very odd situation. So Mesoraco thought he made the team. He didn't. He doesn't want to play in Syracuse. He feels like staying with the Mets, he's too far down the depth chart, so he'd rather go somewhere else. He didn't get claimed on waivers, so I don't know where that elsewhere is. It sounds like Nito is going to make it north of the team. Something's odd there. What are you surprised? Because to me, Nito's got options. Leave him in the minors with another veteran like Rivera. Have Mesoraco be the backup. Unless they think d'Arnaud in 2 weeks will be better, from what I'm hearing from you, this might be a 30-day stint in extended spring. I mean, it's only been 12 months, not even. So there may be another, 4 to 6, 8 weeks of time that d'Arnaud needs. So the situation with the backup catcher, not the end of the world, but odd nonetheless.
Oh, yeah, I definitely think it's odd. And like you said, especially after seeing d'Arnaud, I mean, it'd be one thing if d'Arnaud was maybe like just a week away or maybe just 2 weeks away, because then you have the 40-man roster to take in consideration, and Mesoraco isn't on it. So by choosing Nito over him, who's on the 40, you don't have to worry about making that move. And that's not really a move you want to make for only a couple weeks or something. But like I said, I just don't see how it's that short of a stint with d'Arnaud. maybe the Mets are feeling differently than me. But even with Rivera, so if they signed Rivera, so now if you brought him up, he's on a minor league deal, so he would have to be added to the 42. So it's interesting. Like, Nito is a very, very good defensive catcher. And maybe they feel with the extra off days they have to start the first month that Ramos will be fine not getting those off days early in the season, and they're going to ride him a little bit then. And then once they feel Darno is ready, that's maybe when he'll get a little more of his off days. That's really all I can try to guess about what they're feeling, because it was a little odd to know that Darno's not ready, but Mesoraco's not making the team. The assumption was always, well, if Darno's not healthy, Mesoraco's going to be the backup.
Right. Final thing before we wrap up. Team in the National League, take out the NL East. You felt the Nats were the class of the division. I can't argue with that. I mean, I think it's going to be tight. I think the margin of error is going to be very close, but you got to give it to the Nats. They've been better than the Mets for the last couple of years, and you know, they added a third really good starter that can match the Mets 1-3. They have some young players that have to prove themselves in the starting lineup, but it's a similar type of offense, I think, to the Mets in some of those ways, in a decent bullpen if all works out. Give me a team in the National League that you think, take the Nats out because you mentioned them already, that you really like. Give me a team that you think is going to be a little overrated and disappoint. Give me those two teams to wrap up here.
All right, team that I really like. I think the Dodgers are going to be good this year. They got a ton of offense. They got a lot of pieces they can move around with Muncy and Taylor, and Seager's back healthy, and Turner's healthy, and I just think they've got a ton of positional depth that they can move around, and they still have good starting pitching with Walker Buehler and Kershaw and Rich Hill when he's healthy, and you still have Jensen in the bullpen. I mean, there's a reason why they've been good the last couple of years, and they really haven't subtracted anyone from that team. So I think they're going to be good. Disappointing? I mean, I'd stay in the NL East, honestly. I don't see where the Braves pitching is going to be enough in the starting rotation and in the bullpen. I think they're making a pretty big mistake.
I think Albies comes back down to earth. I think Markakis comes down to earth. I think they played way over the head, Acuna or no Acuna. I agree with you on that. I think you're on the button there.
Yeah, I just don't feel like, I mean, they had a really, in my opinion, they had a really terrible season too. Like, they won the division last year, so why not try to build on that team and go for the rotation to go with those young guys? Or a Kimbrel. I thought Kimbrel was a no-brainer for them. I mean, they had some guys that pitched well last year in the back end of their bullpen, but they don't have the guy with that experience, and bringing him home, I just thought that was a natural fit. And who's to say they don't still do that? That would obviously make a huge difference to them. But for them to not sign a starter and or a closer like that, I think it was a pretty foolish mistake by them. And it kind of slid them. I think they're probably the fourth best team in the division right now.
Interesting. You know, I agree with that. So you think DeGrom signs by Thursday? What is your gut telling you? Or maybe you have info that we don't know about. And who knows, by the time this goes on air, maybe it'll be moot and they're just, you know, whoever's listening to it will say, let's see if these two dopes know what they're talking about.
I would say before the last couple of days that I would have given it maybe like a 25% chance of happening. I would say after talking to a couple of people today that I would say it's 50-50. I think they've had some good conversations recently. I think Van Wagenen has been very proactive in this and wants to get a deal done. I think, like I said earlier, I think there's some issues, there's some weariness in ownership about doing a long.
All right, that's Michael Mayer. He dropped off over there. So I think you get the point there on the DeGrom thing. Check him out at Mike Mayer MMO, MetsMaridonline.com. Check him out over there. Let's take a quick break. We'll return. Final thoughts. You're listening to the Talking Mets podcast. We'll be back with more right after this.
Hey, Mets fans. I'm going to let you in on a little secret. If you're looking for the best unbiased and independent coverage of the New York Mets, then look no further than MetsMarizedOnline.com. MetsMarized Online is the go-to place for comprehensive Mets coverage, including exclusive interviews, daily original articles, great weekly features, in-depth analysis, minor league reports, game-by-game breakdowns, and so much more. Find out why thousands of fans turn to MetsMarized Online every day to get the latest news and opinions about the Mets. Coming from an impressive staff of the most passionate fans and skilled writers ever assembled, all in one place. Check it out for yourselves, Mets fans. Go to MetsMarizedOnline.com right now. That's Mets, M-E-R-I-Z-E-D, online.com, and get mesmerized today.
All right, final thoughts. Great stuff from Michael Mayer. Apologize for him getting cut off. His phone went out, and we had to cut that interview. We pretty much knew where he was going with the contract situation and what have you. It sounds like it's ownership right now. Ownership has to get the feel, the guts, the feel, or the desire to go longer in terms of years. I don't think it's the average annual value. I don't think it's the money in terms of per year. I think it's the years, and I think that's what's going to be the sticking point. And I think their fear is, am I getting myself another Santana contract, another Beltran contract, another Wright contract? And I'm sure insurance is going to get harder and harder with these contracts. And, you know, the Mets don't want to live through that with dead money, especially because you're going to have to make decisions on other pitchers. So, you know, that's where it's at. It's a legitimate concern. At the end of the day, I think both sides have it in their best interest to get this done now. I don't get crazy about deadlines because things could change. It's not like they're not going to be able to do anything. And if they're close, don't be surprised that the deadline gets moved. It doesn't sound from talking to Michael that they're as far apart as maybe we think. So anyway, and then the second thing before we wrap up here, definitely sad to hear about the passing of Marty Noble. Actually, on my old Weekend Watchdogs show, I had a chance to have Marty on with my former partner. And I don't remember what we talked about, to tell you the truth. I'd have to go back. I've had so many radio shows over the last 12 years that sometimes your mind starts to get fuzzy. I used to know every segment. I used to be on top of every segment. Now it's getting hard. It's a lot going on. But sad to hear about the passing of Marty Noble, and that's definitely a loss because there's a wealth of Mets information, especially from the era that I grew up cutting my teeth on the Mets, the 80s and 90s. I mean, he was the man. He was the guy. He was the leader of that beat. And I know he was kind to other members of the media that I know, young members, not necessarily those that are the most well-known. So he was always, I know, willing to share his knowledge and his passion for the art of journalism. So definitely a loss hearing about the passing of Marty Noble. Definitely surprised and sad to hear, because that was someone I was gearing towards potentially as we got into the season, talking about 69 and Tom Seaver and some of the things that are going on. That was a name that I thought of possibly calling up and had his number and getting on the show. So definitely sad to hear about the passing, and it's very much a loss for all those who follow the Mets and the Mets family. So wanted to just take a couple of minutes to talk about that. And then obviously what's coming up. The season starts on Thursday, finally some real games. First test series for the Mets here with the Nats. It should be an interesting series. Best Mets three pitchers against the best Nats three pitchers. And I think both teams are very similar. I think right now, you know, the Mets have a lot to prove. You heard what Michael Mayer said about the Braves. I think the Phillies, the Mets, the Nats, I think the Braves are the team that's kind of a little bit behind those guys. I think it's going to be a tight race. And I think, I don't make predictions, but I do think that it'll be an interesting season. I definitely think there'll be a lot to talk about, and I definitely think we'll be talking about at least the Mets being in a playoff race with two wild cards be tough to see this team, short of them having another catastrophic year of injuries or huge outlier performances, which, you know, at some point, the law of averages says that's not going to happen. I think you'll see them be in the mix. And who knows, maybe you get that great 3 or 4 team race in the National League East. It used to be the old days with the Rays, the Red Sox, and the Yankees. You kept hearing about all the historic 3-team race. It never really happened. So they don't usually work out that way, but these teams look to me, as I go up and down their roster, to be very evenly matched, and each has their strengths, their weaknesses, and I don't think anybody's complete, so it'll be interesting how this thing plays out. A couple of programming notes. 69 Mets content coming up. We'll have Art Chamsky coming up in the next week or so. Wayne Coffey about his new book in the next week or so. And our buddy Rich Catino of 98.7 ESPN might even be popping on live from Washington, D.C. this weekend after the series to come on and talk a little bit about his observations and his time in the Mets clubhouse. So a lot of stuff coming up. I know we're ending the whole Grapefruit League Port St. Lucie edition of the program, and who knows, there'll be obviously a Jacob deGrom extension to talk about, which may happen while you're listening to this. Who knows? We try to get this content as relevant as possible, but with a fluid situation, who the hell knows what's happening? Right now, all we know is the Mets are trying to get to Syracuse and their flight's delayed, and you have a lot of unhappy ball players right now. Just like any unhappy person would have. I've had my flight delayed 3 hours. It's not fun. No different. Anyway, thanks for tuning in. Of course, I want to thank the good folks over at MetsMorizedOnline.com. Send me a tweet at Mike Silva Media, and you get the show on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you can leave me a review on iTunes, it'd be greatly appreciated. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy the rest of your week. We'll be back with more Talking Mets podcast next weekend. Take care, everybody.
Credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.